As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a growing network of people who believe the center of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ, and that learning to take love seriously is vital for how we practice discipleship, mission, and leadership. The Gravity Leadership Podcast explores, in practical ways, how to root our lives and our leadership in this love that holds all of us and everything together.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. My name is Ben Sternke. I'm one of your co-hosts, along with Matt Tebbe.
Hey, Matt.
And Christy Penley. Hey, Christy.
I am so happy to be here, guys.
Woohoo! Christy was actually just saying that we look tired.
You do.
That's what she said right before. I do feel a little bit tired. So anyway,
You need a second cup of coffee.
A second cup of coffee and a vacation. I'm going
there
on vacation soon.
Yeah, you are.
I'm excited about
Come
that.
On.
Which yeah, it'll be, I'm hopeful for a refreshing time.
There's a joke in our family. We all have like little phrases we use in our family that don't make sense outside of our family context, right?
Right,
we do this. Christy,
little in jokes.
Yeah, little inside jokes. One of, something Soren said as a little boy, something Christy's oldest son said as a little boy has become an inside joke in our family.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Tell me.
So I don't remember exactly what Soren did, but he took something of yours,
okay,
that and destroyed it. And you,
Him pay for it.
You made him pay for it. Do you remember what he said?
Well, I was in a pottery class.
Yep.
And I was trying to get my minor in art, and he broke one of my like final pieces.
And he was like 3 or 4 or 5 or something.
Yeah. And I was like, you got to pay for it. He's like, I don't have any money.
No, that's not what he said. He said,
oh,
but I don't have any cash monies.
Cash monies.
It's what he said. And so now whenever Sharon and I want to do something and we don't have the money for it, that's what we say. I don't have any cash money.
You know that story, though. It had a good ending because I did make him pay for it. And of course, he didn't have any cash monies. And so I'm like, well, go find a toy that's really valuable to you. And you're going to have to give it to me for 3 days. He came up with like a little matchbox car, which meant nothing to him. I'm like, oh, no, that does not constitute like what you just like. That's my final in my art class. Mm. And so he went back downstairs. He brought me his Mickey Mouse, which was his lovey at the time. He slept with it every night. He gave up Mickey Mouse for 3 nights, guys, to pay for that pot because he didn't have any cash monies.
No cash monies. No cash money. Yeah, that's funny.
It's cute. But Ben, you did something fun last night. What did you do?
Oh.
Matt was there too. We did, for the first time in 15 months since the pandemic began, we had a table group. at our house. A table group are kind of our, like our missional communities slash small groups. We eat a meal together. It's kind of our church breaking down into smaller groups to meet together, to be the body of Christ, to pray for each other, to care for each other, to discern mission together, and just be with each other, eat with each other. Mm-hmm. And we did that at in our living room for the first time, yeah, in 15 months. It was
awesome.
Beautiful and surreal. And that might be part of the reason I'm tired. I'm just not used to that many people in the house.
My body was like,
what is happening?
Yeah, what is happening? Why are you all here? Yeah.
I don't know.
I love it.
No, it was great. It's good. Yeah, there's like 25 people or so in the house. Kids running around everywhere. It was like, oh yeah, I remember doing this.
Yes, so. I miss that. It's so good. It's like real life is coming back, maybe a little bit.
Yeah,
or new life, because I think there's going to be some changes, maybe forever for us, but new life, a new way of going about things.
Yeah. Well, that's what I found too, is I didn't realize how much I missed it until we started doing it again. I'm like, this, you know, my body was freaking out a little bit, I think, just with, you know what I mean? Like, it takes a while to get used to the social aspect of all that stuff again. But the other aspect of it was like, oh, this was doing so much good work in our community.
Yeah.
And you realize it after it goes away. And then, when you bring it back, you're like, "Oh, this is what we've been missing here." So I don't know, Matt. What did you notice as we were engaged? Matt and I are kind of a part of the same part of the city, and so we're in the same group.
Yeah, as we hung out together.
Yeah, just what did you notice about that at starting it after 15 months?
I found myself noticing that. Maybe my desire to create or produce something for a group of people has diminished. Meaning, I think when we used to gather in small groups, I felt this pressure or push or weight to make this valuable for you.
Create a cool experience.
Bring value to you're coming here. You're spending time with us. Maybe we need to make sure that we deliver something. That was understated. You know, I'm not like up tap dancing and singing Frank Sinatra for people.
although that would be amazing.
Well, yeah.
If you want to bring value.
Yeah, that's July. It's July.
Yeah.
But I found that I was more content to just enjoy what we were doing, just being together. And I think other people did too. And so there was a kind of a reset on the appetite. You know, like if you've ever like drank coffee with sugar. Mm-hmm. And then you go coffee is that's just black and it's like tastes really bitter for like weeks and weeks, but finally you get used to it. And when you try to re-add sugar to your coffee, just a little bit, it's like, oh gosh, it's like a resetting of your like spiritual taste buds of just being together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The goodness of that is like enough. And it like was like, it felt like enough.
Yeah. It was enough.
Yeah.
Nothing more needed. No sugar added.
No sugar added. Yeah. We've been off sugar for 15 months, and now we realize, actually, maybe we don't need that.
Yeah.
We just drink our coffee black.
Yeah.
Can I tell a story about one of my friends? One of my friends was getting off sugar. She's been off sugar for 10 days, and she's on this diet where she's trying to eliminate sugar. And she had somebody get her something from a Starbucks, and it was supposed to be a sugar-free drink, but the person made a mistake and got her a drink with like sugar syrup in it. And she drank it. And she said, like, I immediately got a huge headache, and I got diarrhea. Sorry, I don't know if that's appropriate to say on the podcast.
Oh, Ben.
But she just anyway, it was just like it was a shock to her system after 10 days off sugar.
Mm.
So anyway, made me think of that when you brought up that metaphor. So
yeah. So it was good to be together, and I think we're going to continue to do it.
Yeah. Every week, Thursday night. That's gonna be our rhythm. I'm looking forward to it. If you are new to this podcast, that's one thing I wanted to mention too here in this intro. Like a lot of folks, if our download stats are correct, a lot of new folks are listening to the Gravity Leadership Podcast, and it happened right after we did that 4-part series with Nathan Cartagena on critical race theory. If you haven't heard that series, it's a great Introduction to Critical Race Theory. And I know, like, this topic has only grown in terms of the news cycle. The Southern Baptists are talking about it, and, you know, kind of every denominational, everybody's got to have an opinion about it, and all this stuff is happening about it. But if you want it straight from the scholar's mouth, what critical race theory actually is, that's a great series to listen to. But we also wanted to welcome new listeners. If you're new to Gravity Leadership and you're listening because of that, you know, we did a recent episode on reparations, and we did an episode on the whiteness of the doctrine of God's sovereignty or providence, you know, and all this other kind of thing. But we also do more interviews like this one with Mike Erie that we're about to get into that don't deal explicitly with some of those issues. But we wanted to welcome you to the Gravity Podcast and say we're glad that you're listening. Welcome.
Yeah.
And if you would like to join our online community, I wanted to invite you to do that. If you go to gravityleadership.com/join, and give us your email address, we'll send you all kinds of goodies, send you some introduction to kind of who we are. But then the main goodie that most people sign up for that list for is a list
home
of curated
cookies.
Links.
Oh.
Home, well, no.
No?
Sugar for your coffee.
Sugar, yeah. A little bit of sugar. No, it's a link. It's an email that we send on Fridays that has curated links for just stuff that is out there on the internet. You have to have an internet connection to get this, but it's on the internet, and it's basically articles that we found helpful during the week for discerning how God is at work in culture. Discerning how best to lead our communities well through the cultural landscape. So a lot of those links are about, like, this past week, at least when we're recording this, a lot of the links were about critical race theory and kind of what people are saying about it and that kind of thing. But because that's what people are talking about. And so we assume that's what people are talking about in churches. And it really is important and helpful, I think, for leaders to learn how to navigate some of these issues from a kind of a Christ-centered perspective, kind of rooted in the love of God. Like, we want to do everything on this.
Honestly, for those listeners who are like, wait a minute, I can't handle another email. Like me, I hate opening up email. I'm like, get overwhelmed. But honestly, the stuff in that email is really good and really worth your time. Yeah. So if you're like me and you've got like 116 emails you need to open up, I promise you, if you open up that one, it'll be worth it.
Yes. Well, check it out. Gravityleadership.com/join. Thanks for that encouraging word there, Christy. I write those emails. So every time somebody says that they want to read it, I feel a little warm fuzzy in my heart. So thanks, Christy.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into this interview. Matt, what are we talking to Mike about today?
Yeah, we talked to Mike Erie. I met Mike through his podcast. He has a podcast called Vox Podcast. And as we preached through the Sermon on the Mount last fall, Mike was doing a series on the Sermon on the Mount that closely aligned with our theme and the focus we wanted to have. By the way, I think I pitched that in the interview. It's still going. Still ongoing Sermon on the Mount series is excellent. It's really good. Yeah. So good. Yeah. Anyway, Mike, I knew part of Mike's story from the podcast. Reached out to him, said, hey, would you come share your story? It involves being a pastor at a large church, and then finding that being pastor of a large church was not good for his soul, leaving pastoral ministry, and now dipping his toe back into it, hopefully in a more healthy way. I just thought his story could speak to a lot of what we hear from pastors who find that one of the biggest hazards to being a pastor is being a pastor.
Right.
The job itself creates all kinds of internal and external pressures and problems. So Mike speaks that, tells a story, shoots down an idea I have of having a conference together. It was a great conversation. We had a fun time with Mike. And you can tell Mike is used to being on a podcast because he was great.
Yeah. All right. Well, very good. Let's get into it. Unless there's anything else to announce or say at this point in our cycle. No?
I don't think so. I think this is good. Okay. Covered it. Good work.
We got it. All right. Well, here we go.
Thank you.
Mike Erie, welcome to the podcast.
Well, hey, everybody. Great to be here. Thank you for the kind invite.
Yes. Mike is a pastor. He's a podcaster. He's a Buckeye fan.
And that's not an order of priority, by the way.
I'm just listing them as like a bricolage of interests.
And just to be clear, for our non-sports fans out there, Buckeyes are a sports team.
Yeah, that's based at a poisonous nut.
Yeah, and a poisonous nut.
Don't
eat
it.
Likely you're not a fan of the poisonous nut.
Right, but I still don't know what a
Hoosier... Especially if you live in Michigan.
Oh.
Christy knows what's up, man. There it is.
So this is something we didn't talk about before we hit record. Here's the deal.
Sorry, non-sports fans, again. You'll just have to just push forward through this.
Mike, one of the people, Ben and Christy are with me. Hey, yo.
Hi.
Hey.
One of Ben and Christy is a Michigan fan from Michigan. Yeah. And one of Ben and Christy is a huge grunge band that was in a grunge band in high school.
What?
Is this a game?
Which
Does Mike have to guess who's who?
Yeah, which
one is
which?
I'm going to go Christy's Michigan, and Ben is the band, is the rock star.
What, you don't see grunge in me?
To be clear, though, I was a fan of, you know, the scene in Seattle, commonly called grunge. But I started a punk rock band, and we were too cool to call it grunge. So I resent that comment just a little bit, Matt.
I know what Mike. I know Mike likes Pearl Jam.
Oh, it's just a small time band, just a local.
Alice in Chains.
No. I was a fan though back in the day. Our band was called Pucker.
That's amazing. Of course, you don't want to be associated with grunge with that.
We were far too sassy.
Fours. You're a unicorn, so we're going to call it Pucker.
Yeah, we were totally different than the other folks.
Yeah, of course. Anyway, of course.
We didn't care as much as grunge cared. Yeah. So we were cooler.
Totally. So. Bunch of sellouts, man.
Which made you better.
Totally. Made us better.
All right, Mike. So
always playing status games.
Christy tipped her hat just because she knew about
the rivalry.
Michigan thing. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I wasn't even going to bring it up. I was like, we can be friends.
Hold on. My son is calling me, and I'm sorry about this. Hey, I'm recording a podcast. Can I call you later? Love you, boy.
Driving home.
Okay, I'm hitting leave. All right. I love you with my whole heart.
Is that your son that sometimes shows up on your podcast?
I've heard him on the podcast.
Yes, Seth. Yeah. That's my older son, Nate. He is 17, playing soccer. Seth is my youngest son, and he is 12 and has Down syndrome. And he has an unerring sense of when his father is Zooming or recording. And he will always unerringly interrupt those. With so much cuteness, you can't even get frustrated. Yeah.
We're not even going to edit that out, what just happened there. That was cute enough.
Just tell Nate, thanks for the cute moment, son.
Thanks for the cute moment.
Yeah, Nate, no.
Really raising the value of this podcast.
Is at a soccer tournament, so he's called to tell me about his game.
Oh, cool. Okay,
so, yes, right. We have this agreement. So anyway, go ahead.
So what else need to know? There's Nate, Seth, pastoring, podcasting.
Hannah's my daughter. She's 15, and she is, my goodness, she's a rock star. Like, I didn't have sisters, so having a daughter is the best thing I've ever experienced, ever. Except she's 15, and I'm gross, and I do dad jokes, and I'm
I got a 9-year-old, and I'm gross. So
that's hitting a little early. I was still welcomed.
She wants to be Ariana Grande, so she's ahead of the curve.
One of my favorite. I don't know if I can describe it via audio, but one of my favorite memes right now is I have a 15-year-old as well. She's my youngest, but I like you, Mike. One of my favorite memes right now is just, it's like a picture of, I don't know what, Tilda Swinton, the actress?
Oh, yeah.
She plays some sort of witch in some movie. She plays the witch in every movie, I think.
That's
witch.
Narnia.
She's in Narnia, too.
So it may have been from that movie. I don't know what movie it's from, but there's a picture of her like grimacing and like hissing. And my favorite meme is just me to my 15-year-old daughter, like, hi, honey. Good morning. And then it just has this like picture of Tilda Swinton with the words hissing underneath. I look at that twice a week and I'm like, yes, they understand me. Somebody understands me.
Totally.
No, my daughter's great, but there is sometimes some hissing.
Yeah. Oh, my daughter will literally just warn me, Dad, I'm not in the mood for you right now. So just
at least you get a heads up.
And absolutely.
You
kind of like
let yourself down.
A little warning.
Great progress.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's great. Fantastic. Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
All right. So that's a little bit about your family, Mike. Anything else you need to know before we jump in? We're going to talk to you about pastoring, podcasting, the state of white Christianity.
Yes, I have credentials that are amazing. I took ballet in high school.
Yeah, you did.
For football. I have been on antidepressants for a while. Mm-hmm. I really love ice cream too much. Mm. So that's my list of why I'm here.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah.
You said you were looking for an ice cream fanatic. And I said, yes. Yeah,
we'd love to
hear
what that's
like. Send me.
Well, I want to build up to the ice cream. I'm not sure our audience can handle it right off the bat. So let's start.
For your second visit.
Mike, you have recently moved, and recently I mean in the last couple of years, from California back to Ohio. And I've heard you share part of the story publicly on your podcast, but you were a part of a ministry in California, and there was some complications around that. You bowed out of ministry. You weren't sure you're going to get back in. And then you found yourself moving across the country to become a pastor again, which, if I'm remembering your words correctly, it took you totally by surprise. Hmm. So I'd love to hear part of this story. First of all, tell us about how you find yourself in California and this community that you became leading. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I grew up in Ohio. Sorry, Christy, and married a woman from Michigan, though she was Michigan State. So we both are united in our hatred of the Wolverine.
This podcast is not going well for me right now.
Yep.
But good women come from Michigan is what I'm going to take away.
That's true. That's utterly true.
Well done.
Especially when it's been over 3,300 days since Michigan's beat Ohio State, no one's counting. Oh, no. One is counting.
We need to move on, friends.
And so I moved to California to go to a seminary program that was semi-unique back in the day. Got hooked up with some churches there. A big one was Mariners Church. I was a college pastor for 4 years. I became a teaching pastor at a church called Rock Harbor. That grew a lot and achieved whatever you would consider success in a church in worldly terms. That led me back to Mariners for a couple of years, then to a church called Evie Free Fullerton, which is associated with Chuck Swindoll by kind of folks of his age. And that was some serious burnout. That's when I resigned after 3.5 years there, what I thought was going to be the final stop on the tour. Loads of failure, loads of frustration. And I started a podcast, over 5 years ago, because I was convinced the church should be the safest place to have any conversation, right? If we really do believe in sin, we're never surprised. If we really do believe in redemption, we never give up. If we really do believe in saving, then we're relentless optimists, right? And I just felt like there were all these things that were happening in our world that I couldn't talk about as the pastor of a large church. And whether that was cowardice on my part or some combination of the system or whatever, that opened up a community around our podcast. We planted a church out of our podcast, and I left that about a year and a half in to move to Ohio. I had had a major health scare. My mom was in the middle of a major health scare. She still lives here. So we came with no job. Other than the podcast and a bit of teaching via Zoom back to the church in California, moved 3 years ago. And I just recently, the big surprise, I was done with the whole thing. But the big surprise has been accepting a teaching pastor job in Nashville. So we are on the road again. Shocking. I've already started there, and it is amazingly healthy. So the church has been this foil in so many negative ways, but this community, I realized a necessary part of my maturity, growth, character development was the church. And so between my therapist, family, counselors, spiritual directors, we all thought getting back into a church position was the best thing for me personally. And it's certainly turned out to be true so far. I started that in October.
Yeah. Well, I want to spin things back towards the burnout. Mm-hmm. And I'd love if you could double click on that for us. What was burning you out? How did you know you were burned out? And then why did you decide to leave?
Well, the superficial answer is that there was a unhealthy mix of my woundedness and insecurity and about 600 people in the church who really did not want me to do what the church had asked me to do. And we were seeing things that were great, but I had just done them in ways that alienated folks that really were used to a choir and orchestra, and some of whom would even say, I'd rather have my choir than my grandkids in church. And so the criticism was constant for 3 years. There were some really nasty folks in that church. I was immature and didn't always handle that well. And the reason I resigned is I realized I was not the right person for the job. My leadership gifts, I thought my arrogance, I could teach my way to anything.
Yeah.
And I realized my leadership gifts were entirely wrong for a church kind of rebuild in some ways. And they went out and hired the perfect guy, a shepherd, gentle, kind, process-oriented, slow-moving, like exactly what they needed.
Yeah.
And I was a guy that I rewrote governance because it needed to be done. They had never fired anybody, so I had to let some really loved staff go because we were overstaffed. I mean, I was unwise in how much I decided to take on. Hmm. And on the deeper level, and this is where therapy has been really helpful, I had always used my competence to hide my shame. And whenever the shame came through anyway, I would run.
Yeah.
So this was another instance of me running. So it's kind of on both of those levels that dynamic was at play. So, you know, like anything, man, I think it was the right thing done, not in the right way, but for sure, given who I was at the time, I was just the wrong guy. I wish that was a truth. Cause I loved my ego, loved the big church thing and whatever. And it's been such a gift to not have that and find worth, significance, identity elsewhere.
Yeah, Mike, you mentioned a couple of things we talk a lot about on this podcast. One of them is the crucible of competency, like how when we're talented and gifted, we tend to trust our talent more than is warranted. And especially in our lack of maturity. Yeah. And it's really through the only way I've been able to witness others and myself experience any kind of development of wisdom, especially for gifted and talented people, is to fail.
Oh. Well then, my friend, have I got good news for you.
Let me hear it. I need to receive it.
Oh, let me just that I was thinking of like Paul's boasting in his weakness, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why I like my credentials. I don't like telling people I used to work at large churches or whatever. My credentials are, you know, I have a little boy with Down syndrome who still needs help with going potty. And when I can engage that willingly and joyfully, that counts for something, right? Mm-hmm. When my therapist asked such a good question one day. She's like, when you teach, whose wounds are you healing? Whose wounds are you seeking to heal when you teach? Yours? Right? So I'm wooing people to like me, accept me, think I'm competent, smart, whatever. Or am I really cruciform in the sense that I'm expending energy towards the wounds of other people? And I just thought, my goodness, that is the predominant question in how I approach social media and podcasting. And, you know, I mean, it's these days, it's so hard to try to embody the humble, shamed, socially low status Jesus in ways that you know, I mean, our whole system's built on violating the Sermon on the Mount, right? Everything for the kingdom is supposed to be done in secret, and it's small and it's not noticed. And everything in our world just says, no, you got to shout it and brag about it and boast about it and retweet it. And just working all of that out requires such character formation and community involvement that I'm still learning. I mean, I've been doing this like you guys for a while, and I've just realized how much more I've got to go.
Mike, I love the humility that oozes out of you. And it's really beautiful.
No, it's not oozing. It's hard won. It was hard. I've gotten my ass kicked by myself, by my mistakes, by life, right? I appreciate that so much, Christy, but I have to object and say, I wish it oozed. I want it to ooze, but I have to put on intentional practices or lest I fall back into the old patterns of, you know, stature, credentials, and greatness.
Yeah.
And so it's taken me, you know, and God is, he is so relentlessly majestic in not, in prodding, right? I mean, he doesn't, C.S. Lewis has this great line. He's like, if he were malicious, then maybe we could hope for a fit of mercy. But he's not. He's good. Hmm. And if you're going to put yourself as someone who is in leadership in any way, shape, or form over this big, beautiful church, you don't get out of this without his beautiful and relentless hand working on you through failure. Absolutely. That's how you get it. So thank you. I so appreciate that. I hope it's not inappropriate to push back.
No.
But it's just like, man, I wish it oozed. I would be such a different person of such a different ministry had that been true. But it's been a hard, you know, and I'm still a long way to go, man. Anyway, sorry to interrupt you, Christy. That was so nice. I hope that was not out of bounds.
No oozing.
The only thing that's oozing is this cut on my nose.
Yes,
thankfully, you
I think that's why she used that metaphor. She's just been preoccupied with it.
This podcast is brought to you by Gravity Leadership Academy, our 10-month online training intensive for Christian leaders who want to root their life and leadership in God's love and bring lasting transformation to their culture. In Gravity Leadership Academy, you'll learn the real-life practicalities of how to notice God's presence and activity in and around you so you can participate more fully in God's life and mission and open up space for those around you to do so too. We've worked really hard to make this training in missional leadership practical and doable. To find out more about Gravity Leadership Academy, visit gravityleadership.com/academy.
So many of us who make poor decisions and have bad experiences in churches, who it's a mixture of bad fits, bad people, and our own immaturity. And it's like, you know, it's just this toxic, like gas on a fire. But it's so easy. I remember listening to a podcast, dude, where somebody who had been removed from ministry for being basically a toxic narcissistic leader was coming back into ministry, and he was being interviewed by somebody else. And the interview basically was celebrating how wonderful this guy handled his restoration. But there was very little truth-telling about the jiggery pokery straight from the pit of hell that he was a part of. Like there was no, you know what I mean? Like there's almost like this pious way. Well, totally. We all have struggles and weaknesses.
There's a whole cottage industry built on people who've blown it coming back healthier and better than ever.
Without telling the truth about it. Like really telling the truth about it. I mean, Christy and I know each other for a long time. I think Christy heard you telling the truth about yourself, dude. Mm-hmm. I think she heard you telling the truth about what happened at Rock Harbor and Mariner and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that's what she, Christy, I don't want to speak for you, but
yeah,
we've heard enough people not tell the truth about stuff.
Right. Right.
Well, I would love to hide it. It's just, I'm a poor hider as it turned out. Mm. So,
Well, so you leave this big church and you start a podcast, 'cause that's what you do when you're unemployed white guy. And
that's right,
Christian.
That's right. Yeah, and middle-aged.
Middle-aged, yep. Yeah. What? Why not?
But take all the boxes.
But you started this podcast, and it you said it led to becoming a church, which is probably not why you started the podcast. Tell us about that season and why that church was different.
Oh well, So we based the podcast on three values or convictions, right? First, the church should be the safe space talking about anything. Second, the posture of the church is love and service to the world, not to sit in judgment of it. And third, the church had to innovate constantly to capture the hearts and minds of the next generation. And, or risk, maybe not innovate, but just risk. And we saw this, we called them spiritually homeless folks. We saw just a ton of people. The first podcast we did was Why Gay Marriage is Good for the Church. And coming out of this big church, it went through that church like wildfire, like here's how, you know, off the rocker he is. But in it, I was just essentially suggesting like, hey, evangelicals, if you hold the traditional view, you can't just pretend this isn't out there anymore. Like you have to deal with the double standards of, hey, divorce, great, premarital, extramarital, okay, you're welcome. But two gay men holding hands, ooh, no, that's going to be a problem. Like, mm-hmm. it was a good reckoning for us.
Yeah.
And I found that there were all of these people who were sincere. I mean, you know this, that were totally infatuated with the person of Jesus, but the institutional forms of the West were increasingly irrelevant or harmful.
Yeah.
And we thought, okay, well, and again, this can be an arrogant thing or it could be a good thing. We thought, okay, we don't want to just be a community that sits and critiques. We want to be a community that creates. And so we tried to build a church built on a different set of values, built around the Eucharist, which was new for me, built around embodying those three convictions. And so the metaphor we thought of was the table, Jesus's table, fellowship with sinners. And so we said no to every other programming option except the table. So we had corporate table, which was Sundays. We had communal table, which was once a month. People in our community would open their homes to other people in their community. And then success for us was a personal table where you began to take the initiative in your neighborhoods or with your coworkers, friends, soccer. And that was it. There were other great churches that did Bible studies, recovery groups, men's, women's teas, and whatever else. So there was a ruthless focus on the one hand. The second thing we really wanted to be was, this is when LGBTQ stuff was going crazy, and we wanted to be a church where affirming and non-affirming Christians could love each other. So we would have people taking the bread and the cup who thought simultaneously, gay people are not only welcome, but affirmed and in all of their gayness and can follow Jesus without question. They would share the table with people who thought, no, these people are going to go to hell. We had illegal immigrants taking communion with Trump supporters and Trump t-shirts. And we thought, so we called it center focus. We wanted to be center focused, that the table is what kind of unites us. And obviously, you know, we made mistakes along the way, but that was all new for me because it wasn't performance and it wasn't CEO type. Industry, and it wasn't just the proliferation of programs and staff to keep people happy. It was focused on countercultural friendship, really more than anything else. And there were things that went along with that that were great. There were things that went along with that that weren't great. It was tough a year and a half in for me to leave, and I left very poorly. Again, the running thing. I didn't realize the running. That's again, I was running. And did a lot of damage to people in the way that I left, because we had to get our kids in school here if we were going to move. And so it was 2 weeks. 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. People had sacrificed huge amounts of time and money to make this happen. And then, bam, I leave. And I just hate that decision so much, because we were on to something that was from my experience, it was a bit different. Not that it was in any way better. It was just different. I didn't have to perform on Sundays. The teaching didn't carry the service,
right?
This liturgy did not. And obviously our liturgical friends have known this for years. And but it was new for me, and it was a really life-giving way of doing community. And so that's why I was so certain that I would never do church again. That had spoiled me, you know, to the core, because there we tasted something. I tasted something that I had not tasted in church before.
Yeah,
Mike. So now you're go ahead. Go ahead, Matt.
Well, I want to, you mentioned this twice now. What is it about shame?
Oh man.
That makes us run.
Oh, fig leaves, baby. This was our first maneuver. This is ingrained. Right? I mean, this is Genesis 3. Bam. That in, for me, I had all, the stage became a very safe place because I could control how vulnerable I was. And I was known for being vulnerable and talking about mental illness or whatever. We have a little boy with Down syndrome and talking about the struggle of not getting the family of your dreams. And, but there was this performance driver to all of that, that I, you know, that fed ego, but also would feed shame. And I realized, that being religious is a great way to disguise your fig leaves. Right. But as one of my spiritual directors says, it's the worst, being religious, the worst place to hide from God. We think it's the best place, but once you let a little bit in of Jesus, he's a very disruptive and intrusive presence, and it's glorious, but it is certainly not, in C.S. Lewis's words, it is not safe. All that is to say, it wasn't until, man, 48, last year, that I realized the patterns that shame had wrought, and the decisions I made that would perpetuate it. And I realized, my goodness, the whole, God is so great, he can use any motivation ever. But so much of what I'd been doing and how I'd lived in the world was managing that. And I wasn't able to access it. But when I did, it was, you know, with the help of some folks, it was very, very life transforming. You know, so yeah, I would run. I would stay distant, right? Because I was the dude on the stage who knew stuff. I there was the guy who just lectured on what shame was. I didn't even know what shame was. I just knew when I felt it, but I didn't know what it was. And so the realization, wow, so much of what I've done with God and the performing I've done with him, performing I've done everywhere is rooted around that bit. And hallelujah, God can take, you know, jars of clay and turn them into something valuable. But my word, the amount of work that needed to be done to sort of dismantle these ways of being in the world. Still, I mean, just immense. It's forever, you know, at this point. But so good. So for me, because shame caused me to run, you know, what was attractive was sitting and podcasting in Ohio by myself. Mm. That was the least healthy thing in the world for me. Mm. And so what healing looks like, and it took forever to be really convinced of this, healing looks like going back to the place that wounded you and doing it in different ways with different people and running kind of towards the wound. Because it wasn't really the church that wounded me, right? It was a whole combination of things, but it was just easier to sort of sit above it all and talk about it without the, you know, don't you, young lady, when you ask me this question, do you not know who I am? Like, you know, we just the dumb, I mean, just horrible. Yeah. So it's just so, it's so great to see all of that triggered again, but now in an entirely different posture with a support system that can help sort through it.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you mentioned, you know, podcasting was the worst thing for you. It's just another stage, right? Totally. And now it's one that people can't even see you. Can't even see you have a band-aid on your nose or whatever, you know.
Well, yes. no, that's exactly right. But for me, it was isolation that was the killer.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
You know?
I also was just struck by that you know, I completely understand it. People sort of being hurt by the church, and I know the church is jacked up, and you know, you can get hurt there. But I think there is this trap that we can fall into of sort of othering the whole church as if we're not part of the church.
Yeah.
Right. And just saying like, oh, there's this boogeyman out there called the church that is somehow more nefariously wicked than the rest of the world, or, and I'm not part of that. And that, you know, and maybe at the initial phases of realizing some hurt there, maybe that's okay to kind of sift and sort some things. But, I think it's a trap to stay there. So it's interesting that your move is to come back into the church and serve the church in a more
explicit way. Yeah. No, but that's the shame bit, right? The answer to shame is being known and accepted and loved.
Yes.
And so community, we're hurt in community and we're healed in community, right? That's kind of how it works.
Speaking of being hurt in community, Christy, you have a question.
I'm just, I tried to jump in a couple times.
Sorry.
You have been.
Sorry.
I noticed that, Christy.
No, I'm just interested. You're going, you just took a job at a church in Nashville, and you're walking right back into that. Tell us a little bit. I mean, there's been healing. There's been, you know, spiritual formation, growth in the shame area. It sounds, I mean, you do not sound like a burnt out, bitter person, which I hear when people leave churches, right? And that's not you. And so I'm interested to hear, like, how did you make this decision? What is this healthy, because you called it a healthy church, look like? Mm-hmm. How is it different? And how did you know that?
Oh my goodness. No, you have been saving up. Those are by far better questions than anything that the other guys were bringing up. So thank you.
It's, now it's we're typically getting down. How it goes.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Let's see here. So I have made many dumb decisions in life. I've wrestled with pornography. I texted inappropriately, person not my wife. I got caught by God's mercy and the mercy of really good friends. And there was a reckoning, baby, when I just, in Ohio alone, gaining weight, eating too much, looking at pornography, like just all that whole package for me was shame and management and medication. And so I have a wonderful friend who's like, hey, this just looks a little weird. And they're so this tribe of friends is the best tribe in the history of the world, because they did it in a way, they talked to me in a way that just was inviting and didn't add to the shame narrative. And that story is just super incredible. And then they recommended a place in Tennessee called OnSight, where you go, and I was part of a 6.5-day group of just some of the men and some of the issues. I knew in theory these things existed, but it was until you're meeting guys, it's like, oh my goodness. And that was that was the beginning. It was the first time I'd actually tasted what a small group is, right? Because it was funny because the group, we led off the group by telling everybody the worst things about ourselves. And after that, it was so funny. There was no pastoring. None of the people there were Christian that I'm aware of. But there was this cohesion in the group, and the group started shepherding itself without the therapist having to say a word. Three of the men were considering leaving their wives for their partners that they were having affairs with. Somebody... Well, it doesn't matter, but this was like extreme. And I'm like, hey guys, I was flirting inappropriately. And the lie I believed was that I was different. I didn't belong there. And as you get into the dynamics of shame and guilt and all this stuff, I'm realizing, my Lord, this is the closest thing I felt to quote church in my life, because I could be completely and utterly honest as a Jesus follower and not have my job in jeopardy, my social status in jeopardy, my credentials in jeopardy. It was just like as real and as ruthless. And then you hear the abuse and the trauma that these men had undergone and the path that led to their behaviors. And you're sitting there going, my Lord, the church doesn't have categories for this, right? I mean, we're just not, at least in my experience, we don't make room for prequels or sequels. We're just dealing with, you know, the sin in your life now.
Yeah.
And it was so eye-opening. And then I had this moment of kind of getting in touch with some stuff that I had not ever been in touch with. And it was incredible. And I'm sitting there going, this is one of the most profound spiritual experiences of my life. And I come out of that and I go back to meet with the guy who specializes on shame for 3.5 days. And it's just this, explosion of all this stuff. And you're just sitting there going, okay, what do I do with this now? And my wife and our kids are involved in this and our podcast community. And I mean, it was so remarkable to taste friendship without the performing, right? Without competence. I mean, it was just, and again, it's so cliche, but it was so true. So all that is to say, Christy, the trajectory of my life came to a head in those moments. And what came out of that was an absolute reconfiguration of the whole thing. And I'm trying not to use too grand of language because I'm just over a year in, but the church, like one of the places I was practicing repentance was going to a church where I didn't preach or teach or wasn't anybody. No one knew or cared what I'd done or what books I'd written or anything. And so I went to this Lutheran church, and they don't care about this Sunday after Easter. You got to put your big show on for visitors. They didn't care. They just did what they did, and it was glorious. And so there's all this reconfiguring. And then my spiritual director is like, you really got to think about going back to what hurt you, or at least where your hurt became manifest. So we began to pray, well, I shouldn't be a senior pastor. Well, the first prayer was, hey, should I even go back and do this? Mm-hmm. Or does that facilitate shame, healing, or ego? Mm-hmm. And, so I applied to the post office and was thinking about, I look good. I really look good in shorts. And so I was like UPS. But there was this universal tribal agreement that for me, church could be a place of healing because it's been a part of my devotional life and the realest part of my devotional life forever. And so we began to say, okay, so can't be a senior pastor, just wouldn't be healthy. Would love to be a teaching pastor, would love to be in a small church, and would love to have healthy boundaries. There were some seasons when I would preach 5 or 6 services a weekend and then, crash until Wednesday or Thursday the following week. And I just didn't want to get into that. And that we would be a part of a healthy team who knew everything and still hired me. Mm-hmm. So 2 weeks after I began praying for that, I told nobody because I was kind of embarrassed. I got a call from a friend who was like, hey, we just had a pastor leave because of some moral issues. And our executive pastor became the senior pastor. And we're wondering, we need a teaching pastor. And this was a guy who'd listened to our podcast and had known all this stuff and was like, hey, so my interview process was so weird. I just shared what I was learning in therapy and all of what I've been learning in my failures and the steps I've taken in repentance and the sin that still resides. And these glorious folks welcomed that conversation, not only welcomed it, but considered it a sign of health to have conversation at that level. And it has been remarkable. Even though I'm commuting from Columbus to Nashville to teach, it has been utterly transforming to be around a community of people where I'm not the person I'm a full part of a 4-member team who all have gifts as equal in my to mine, but in different areas. And following a team leader who is utterly secure. And that has just been ridiculous. So it was, you know, I'm not a big, like, God answers every prayer or there are always demons or, you know, I do believe there sometimes coincidences happen and we can be thankful to Jesus for those. But this was like there's a direct line from my heart to this, that it was just unmistakable. And I'm just so grateful. And then there have been a whole bunch of, tell me if I'm over talking. It's hard to capture the journey because I don't feel burned out at all. I feel more invigorated than ever. I don't feel cynicism, although I'm fully aware of the carnage of the church and some elements of it. What I feel instead is profound gratitude and joy to be able to expend my life in these ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel, at least so far, a great deal of freedom in not having to be impressive. And that's really new for me, because that's always how I would try to mask, you know, and cover. So, because I go into the church and they know everything. They know it all. They know the truth.
Yeah.
You know, they called my spiritual director. They called my board for Vox, who knew everything. Because the texting stuff wasn't that even what that's not in evangelicalism. That's like, ooh, that's the deal breaker. My goodness, that's just a symptom of things that were going on for decades. You know, ways of finding validation and ways of medicating. And it was so great to be around a community who didn't just react to the symptom, but saw it as, this is Mike's soul telling us about the state that it's in.
Yeah.
And that doesn't remove consequences or hurt or whatever, but it reframed the conversation so that I wasn't sitting there marinating in shame. I was invited to drop that and pick up something else.
Yeah.
And so it was just a remarkable thing for me. And I'm beyond grateful to the friends who helped.
Yeah. You
know, it would have been an entirely different story otherwise.
You know, Mike, I feel like maybe our listeners are feeling how I am, but I needed to hear that. I needed to hear that, because I think in my story, I believe the lie that failure's bad. Like, the only outcome of failure is bad. And I just need to hear that, no, failure is an opportunity for God to open my eyes to where he really wants to work. And I don't like that as an Enneagram 3. It's like worst case scenario for me, right? And yet I need that. I need to see people model that in front of me. And I need to be encouraged and the freedom to say, I have nothing to prove and nothing to earn. And I just.
And nothing to hide.
And nothing to hide. Yes. That's the big one for me. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. This is just what Paul's been saying the whole time, right? I mean, I've never seen it, but I just took my previous job descriptions. And then I went through Paul's letters and just wrote down everything he says about ministry and pastoring. And, you know, no shock. They were antithetical pictures. There's hardly any overlap. And when he talks about resurrection power only rests in weakness, you know, the reason we don't see God's power is we just make so much of our own in the American church.
Yeah.
Right. It's our next great series and our incredible small groups and make sure the fog machine's going at just the right level. And okay, that's fine. God can use all of that, but it just belies the shame that we're hiding corporately, that God is exposing. See, that's the beautiful thing. Yeah. All of this stuff happening in the church. This is good news. This is when Jesus deconstructed the Judaism of his day. He told the truth about it, and he is doing the exact same thing with the American church, and I, for one, am thrilled. This thing needs to die in its current form so that it can be resurrected as something vibrant, something without contamination by nationalistic policies and politics and all of the gunk that's just been a part of this thing for so long.
Yeah.
And so I actually find this whole thing to be really exciting. It actually strengthens my faith to see the Lord will not allow the abuse in our midst and the ego in our midst and the selfishness and greed in our midst to just go unnoticed. Mm. I'm so, so grateful for that. I'm so grateful for that, even though it's causing tons of pain.
Yeah. I want to chat maybe about that as we close a little bit here, Mike, but I'm just noticing as you told your story, you shared how easy it was to hide in shame, whether you were on a platform in front of 2,000 people or in your living room by yourself. Mm-hmm. And what I hear you describe is what caused the shame to lose its bondage on you was finding people who wouldn't let you hide or run and facing and befriending your shame with them. That's one
and
of the
people
most,
who wouldn't hide and run from you once you revealed it.
Totally. Right. That's one of the most transformational things is when we are just exposed and people are like, oh, there's more of Mike to love now.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's so cliche, but that's why people run to AA meetings rather than small groups.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. They know grace awaits them.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
And that's why church leadership is such a damaging. I have a professional and financial investment in presenting myself to be more holy than I am. Because it's okay to have struggled, right? I used to struggle with porn. Yeah, for sure. Or no, last night actually, instead of preparing for the message, I spent an hour on this website looking up this. Right? Hmm. No one's going to want you to teach after that. Or it can be alcohol or it can be whatever. Yeah. But again, those are all symptoms. Those don't matter. They matter in the sense that they're fruit. Yeah. And we're to be judged by fruit, of course. But they don't matter in the sense of that's where healing doesn't come from trying harder or feeling bad.
Right.
It's the embodiment of the grace and acceptance of Jesus. And again, we'd all know it theologically. Mm-hmm. But to find people who actually sit in it with you, it's a whole different thing. And you know what we've discipled to people to be in isn't that right? We've discipled much other postures, so I think it's just it is how can I be harsh with people who I am one of. But at the same time, there's like this opening up there are new possibilities to this thing that I really had always heard of and believed theoretically, but okay.
Yeah.
So it'd just be great. I'd love to have a pastor's gathering where we just told the truth about each other. Mm. I'm envious of this person. And so I do this,
Let's do it.
That would be incredible.
Let's do it. Let's do a co-sponsored there. Gravity Vox podcast.
No, no sponsoring. Let's just, if we're going to do it.
I mean, let's pull it together is what I'm saying. Let's just take responsibility for it, else it doesn't happen.
Okay. That'd be great.
Mike, we got to wind down, man, because you've got a soccer game to hear about.
Oh, I'm very important.
And I've got to walk around my house.
7 times, blowing and then blow
showing,
a shofar.
Showing everybody who's in charge.
However long it takes for my children to respect me.
Do you know who I am?
You referenced kind of how everything is being revealed right now in sort of white American evangelicalism and maybe a larger like the white just American conservative church. Where does this end? What's God doing here in terms of as you listen and think, what's happening?
Man, I don't know, but if I were to guess, it looks a lot. So when I look at how Jesus had to deconstruct his disciples and how he approached the things that had been intended for good by God, but had been hijacked by the powers and by evil men primarily. So he did several things at once, right? He of course he told the truth, but he embodied the alternative. So it's not just enough to sit in our cynicism and say this sucks, but we have to actively work to embody the alternatives, not in a reactionary way, but in a way that invites people not to move to the opposite extreme, but forward, right? And beyond these sorts of ways of thinking and practicing. He was so, I mean, the responses of just go through the Gospels and hear how the core disciples respond to him. And you realize, my goodness, he is so dismantling everything they thought about Messiah and Israel, temple and priesthood. Mm-hmm. And you realize, okay, so if that is an historical parallel, what's to think that Jesus isn't doing the same thing today? Mm. So, and when did it end? Well, it ended when the natural ways that Israel understood itself that were not of God's kingdom played themselves out in such a way that the kingdom of Israel was crushed underneath Roman boots, and that its temple was destroyed so that literally had nothing left to build its foundation on except the Pharisees. The schools of the Pharisees introduced rabbinic Judaism and introduce the importance of the synagogue and spiritual sacrifices. But so to me, until we all lose tax-exempt status, turn bivocational, repent of the sins of racism, sexism, homophobia, whatever else, this is going to keep happening. And personally, I think it won't be until our temples are destroyed that literally we begin to lose our buildings, that we'll begin to imagine and conceive of church in alternative ways. You know what I mean? Yeah. Until there's actual financial ruin is the only way the American church is going to repent.
Until the golden calf of mammon is melted.
Come on! Someone's preaching, Matt!
Then repentance and revival will break out.
Yeah. And it's already happening. We're seeing because we're telling the truth about people like Ravi, who I had great admiration for. And if you're not familiar, Ravi Zacharias, you're like, wow, okay. So what's that tell us about us? Is it shocking that he's sinful? Nope. Is it shocking that he hid? Nope. Is it shocking that it was this bad? Nope. What's shocking? Shocking that we were never open to the possibility that someone like that could do something like this. And that's the whole celebrity thing has just got to die. So it's got to be the Christian publishing industry that dies. It's got to be Christian music that dies. The financial gain we have for being religious. And I'm a part of this. That whole thing has to die. And the deconstruction won't happen fully or be complete until that's reckoned with.
Yeah.
You know, and that will take a lot for Americans. That will be a long time for us to get there.
Yes, we may even find a few convenient scapegoats to offer up to the gods so that we can save ourselves.
yes. Oh, that's so good, Matt. That's exactly what we'll do.
Yeah.
Because remember, the Pharisees thought that the reason God had not redeemed Israel, it was because of the sinners.
Yeah.
The sinners in Israel.
Yeah,
so, of course, the reason the American church is persecuted is because of all the sinners.
Well,
it's the exact same play.
It's better for these people to be kicked out for the whole church to perish.
It's just
logical.
Yep. It's better if the Beth Moores are sacrificed than for the whole denomination to go to hell.
Oh man.
It's the same thing.
But then we've got to look inward, right? Because here's my jam, Christy. My jam is to judge the judgers, and then I join them. And that's why my energy cannot be focused on judging the judges, but building something that is a prophetic alternative to some of the idols. So it will have its own idolatries. That's just, we can't help ourselves.
Yeah.
But maybe we can introduce some things that haven't been a part of the conversation in a while.
Yeah. Mike, thanks for kicking it with us today.
Oh, thanks. What an invite. Thank you.
It's great.
So good.
Hey, will you, we plug your pluggables. By the way, this fall... Come on, dude. I'll do it then.
He just shakes his head no.
I'll do it. Nope. This fall, we preached through a sermon series called Living the Politics of Jesus in a Partisan America.
Oh, that's so good.
And we preached this Sermon on the Mount. And I had, you know, like any dutiful pastor, I'd gone through all my best commentaries and pulled out some accessible ones for our preaching team. And yeah. then Mike, you start podcasting on the Sermon on the Mount, and I just threw out my commentaries, and I was like, teaching team, listen to just Mike's listen to podcast this. On the Sermon on the Mount.
No!
And I'm not kidding you, man. We have stay-at-home moms that are preaching. We've got
We've got
all different kinds of people all over the place that are teaching with like a normal commentary. You give it to them, and they're just like, "What do I do with this? And how do I use
right.
it?" And it's
oh.
By far, your commentary series on the Sermon on the Mount was the most helpful resource we gave our team.
Yeah.
So I'm just channeling really smart people.
Yeah, I get it. But the way you're digesting it and then feeding us, it's really good. Yeah. So, Vox Podcast, check it out with Mike Erie, especially this series on the Sermon on the Mount. But he's got 190 some odd episodes you can, you know, just put yourself to sleep every night with. Mike, thanks for being with us today.
Absolutely, you guys. Great to meet you. Thanks for the work you're doing. Thanks for putting up with my rambling today. I appreciate it.
All right.
Great to be with you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Our show is produced by Ben Sternke, Matt Tebby, and Ben Hardman. Aaron Sternke does our mixing and mastering. You can check out his work at aaronsternke.com. If you find our podcast helpful, share it with your friends in person and on social media. And don't forget to rate and review us online, as well as subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can join our Gravity community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join. And hey, we'd love to hear from you. Ask a question, make a comment, send us an idea, a recommendation, recipe, whatever. You can email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.